Shir for biographies of great Rabbanim. Today we will discuss the Chafetz Chaim, Rabbi Yisrael Meir HaKohen, who was born in 1838 and died in 1933. Please visit us online at EnglishTorahTapes.com, where you can listen and download thousands of Torah Shiurim for free. It can be said of very few men that their lives were directed entirely by a pasuk from the Torah. But one such man was Rabbi Yisrael Meir HaKohen, who dedicated his entire life to pasuk 14 of Perek and Tehillim 37, which says, "Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking guile." He was called the Chofetz Chaim, the will to live, for like the ancient scribe Rabbi Alexandri, he would travel from village to village and from town to town, and he would stand in the marketplace like any peddler announcing, "Where is he who desires to live? Who has the will to live? Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking guile." And from the time he began influencing people to his way of thinking and to adopting his moral code, thousands knew him only as the Chofetz Chaim. His real name was almost forgotten. There are many works from the Chofetz Chaim that you can listen to online. There's Mishneh Berurah, of course. There's Chofetz Chaim and the Proper Laws of Speech. There's Parables of the Chofetz Chaim. There's the Mitzvahs HaKot, Sefer Mitzvahs HaKot from the Chofetz Chaim. There's Chofetz Chaim and the Parshios. There's Chofetz Chaim and the Megillos. There's Chofetz Chaim and Pirkei Avos. There's Chofetz Chaim and the Agadah, as well as many others for him that you can learn and listen to, or if you'd like to get CDs on all of them, it's available. Now we will continue with the life of the Chofetz Chaim. Yisrael Meir HaKohen was born in Polish Lithuania in a small town called Zisatil, near Grodno, in 1838. His father, Arya Zev HaKohen, was a very highly respected Jew, a Talmud Chacham, whose uprightness and fine character was only exceeded by his wisdom. It was these outstanding characteristics which made their imprint upon the education and upbringing of his son, little Yisrael Meir. The boy's mother was delighted with her baby and hoped he would grow up to be a credit to her goodness and purity of thought and action. When he was still a small child, she would sit Yisrael Meir next to her, open her prayer book, and together with him read the prayers. Thus she quickly taught him to read and pray. As a youngster, his extraordinary intelligence showed itself, and he was known throughout the town as a lad of great promise. Whenever a neighbor would remark upon the brilliance of her son and would say, "How do you come to have such a wonderful boy?" the mother would reply, "I'm just a simple woman, and I take no credit for it. But if Hashem gave him to me, apparently I must have deserved him." His father, Reb Arya Zev, once took him to Vilna when the boy was still very young and proudly introduced him to the elders of the Jewish community there. One of them questioned the youngster on certain chapters of the five books of Moshe, Chumash, and was greatly impressed with the boy's responses. Patting little Yisrael Meir on his cheek, he said, "You are a fine boy and should always be most careful never to lose your good reputation." The youngster was never to forget those words. He strove with all his might and main to be a good boy. He was a model student, extremely diligent, and would often fall asleep over the Gemara. His father once carried him to his bedroom fast asleep and tucked him into his bed. Half an hour later, Reb Arya Zev was astounded to find the youngster back at his books, revising what he had studied earlier in the day. But that was not what made the Chofetz Chaim great. The Jewish people had and have their geniuses, their brilliant scholars and debaters, their great interpreters and commentators well-versed in the maze of halacha. These we have and had, although in no great number. But only one man could live up to the high standards of ethics and morals set by the Chofetz Chaim, and that man was Rabbi Yisrael Meir HaKohen himself. He was the one and only, and these virtues were early recognized in the boy. When still a child, playing with children of his age, he joined in childish pranks in the town marketplace, and it happened that a basket of apples belonging to one of the vendors overturned, and all the fruit rolled out here and there. Squealing with excitement, the children made a dash for the fruit, snatching as many apples as their little arms could hold, and made off with their booty. Yisroel Meir was one of them. He too snatched the fruit from the paving stones, and he too ate as much as he could. Several days passed, and the lad was sitting with his father learning Chumash. Reb Aryeh Zev was reading, and he came to the words, "You shall not steal, you shall not covet." Yisroel Meir heard the words, and they drummed into his little brain, "You shall not steal, you shall not covet." What was stealing? What was coveting? Was not that just what he had done in the marketplace? Had he not stolen apples? He thought the matter over and reached a decision. Asking his mother to give him a few coins, he set out for the marketplace. Passing by the fruit stalls, he came to the vendor whose apples had upset, turned over. He asked the old woman there for as many apples as his money would buy. She took the money and gave him the fruit. He put all the apples back in the woman's stall and ran back home. Then there was a case of the village water carrier, whom the youngsters from the cheder would constantly annoy. During the winter months, when the poor man would leave his empty pails near the well overnight, the little rascals from the cheder would creep up, fill the pails with water, and leave them there to freeze over during the night. Next morning, when the carrier came to begin his daily rounds, he had to work for a good hour breaking the ice before he could start earning his meager living. When young Yisroel Meir heard about this, he decided to do something about it. Late at night, when he knew that all the other boys would be at home, he crept up to the well and poured the water from all the pails back into the well. Every night, he would carry out this self-imposed act of generosity, and nobody ever found out who the angel was who undid the tiresome prank played upon the poor water carrier. Reb Aryeh Zev passed away when Yisroel Meir was only 10 years old. His passing was a great shock to the boy, but slowly he pulled himself together and devoted more and more time to study and improving himself. He realized that this would have been his father's wish, and as much was a sacred task. The lad was sent to Vilna to the Beis HaMedrash Reb Chaim Nachman Parnas, where the best students of Lithuania studied and where his father had studied up to the time he died. The usual age for accepting students at that Beis HaMedrash was 17 to 18, but the outstanding integrity and ability of Yisroel Meir were the virtues which opened the gates of that Jewish collegedom, even though he was much less than 17. The Maskilim, those of the Enlightenment movement, also had their eyes on the boy. In Vilna, the movement had quite a large following, and they saw in Yisroel Meir a youngster who could be very useful to them if they could ensnare him. Thus, they made considerable efforts in that direction, trying to lead the youngster away from the straight and narrow path and get him to join their fraternity. At one time, it even seemed as though they might be successful, and they believed they had captured the boy's imagination and drawn him away from the influence of the Gomorrah. But they were in for a great disappointment. His faith and confidence were too deep-rooted for them to make any but a fleeting impression upon him. In Vilna, Yisroel Meir continued to be the thoughtful and considerate person he was. He accidentally trod on the foot of one of the students, which the latter did not even notice. However, young Yisroel Meir waited until the Eve of Atonement, Yom Kippur, and then went to look for the other young man to apologize for his error. He explained there was a considerable difference between offenses against the mitzvahs of Hashem and those against our fellow men. For Hashem was everywhere to be found, while man was but a flitting shadow whose span of life was short. Therefore, it was important to take advantage of every opportunity to apologize to our fellow men, for otherwise it might be too late. He was still a very young man when he married. His father-in-law was a well-to-do merchant who was extremely fond of Yisroel Meir and provided him and his bride with all they needed. But misfortune struck the family, and shortly after their marriage, the father-in-law suffered serious business reverses and lost his fortune. He then suggested to his son-in-law that he considered taking the position of a rabbi to a community. Yisro Meir had great respect for his wife's father, but nonetheless his reply to the suggestion was a no. The whole family endeavored to persuade him to change his mind, but he was adamant. Even the entreaters of his wife, who pointed out that his acceptance of such a position would bring honor and respect to the family, were of no avail, and his irrefutable reply to her was, if the ministry really brought honor and respect, the argument in Pirkei Avos would not advocate. True respect is given a man only by virtue of his straightforwardness and good deeds. At about that time, a nearby town was seeking a rabbi to head its Jewish community, and Yisrael Meir's mother came to persuade her son to go to and accept the position. He did not know what to tell his mother that would not appear ungracious, so he said with great simplicity, "Mother dear, I do not have sufficient knowledge to be a rav or rabbi and give decisions on halachic law." This reply convinced the whole family that he had no intention of becoming a rav of a community, and they left him in peace, even enabling him to spend a year away from home at a distant place of learning. When he returned to Radin, where the family was then living, the position of rabbi happened to be vacant. The town elders came to Rabbi Yisrael Meir and respectfully invited him to become their spiritual leader and guide. He accepted the invitation only after they had agreed to his three irrevocable conditions. Number one, that he received no remuneration. Number two, that they forgive him any errors he may make in his judgments. And number three, they abide by his decisions. The acid test came within a few short months, and Rabbi Yisrael Meir resigned. What caused it was the case of two Jews who came before him to ask for his judgment in a dispute between them. Rabbi Yisrael Meir decided in favor of one of them and ordered the other man to pay him, but the latter refused to honor the decision. Rabbi Yisrael Meir called upon the town's elders, saying, "I beg you, relieve me of the responsibility of being your rov. I do not wish to continue that capacity. I want to be a simple citizen like anybody else." That brief experience proved to the young rabbi that it was a hard task leading a community. He recalled the warning of Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, who said, "Who guards his mouth and tongue, guards himself from trouble." And indeed, why should he bring trouble upon himself? He preferred to live in peace in his own little corner. However, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter correctly summed up the qualities of Rabbi Yisrael Meir when he predicted, "That prince of men has been selected by the Almighty as a future leader of the Jewish people. His way of doing things, his every action, indicated and led up to the time when he would be a leader among his people. He became a hermit, keeping himself to himself, sitting in his little corner, constantly studying. And when even the sanctuary of the Beis HaMikdash seemed too public a place for him, he would escape to the forest nearby and penetrate deep into his woody silence and solitude until he reached a particular tree behind which was an open pit. There on the edge of the pit he would stand and reflect aloud, crying out, 'Yisrael Meir, it is honors you seek.' 'Honors? Huh? For what for? You've studied a little today, so you think you're great? Remember, Yisrael Meir, what will become of you? Maybe your end will be a pit like this one here.'" He wrote his Sefer Chofetz Chaim when he was 28 years old. His philosophy was well and clearly expressed in it: "Speak no evil." But he purposely omitted to print the name of the author in the book and began traveling from town to town and from village to village, selling it as the author's agent and representative. Rabbis, yeshiva principals, students, scholars, and pious Jews all brought the Sefer, the book, and read it with interest and pleasure. When they finished it, they felt inwardly changed, as though overcome by some great spiritual happening. Mystified, each tried to examine his own thoughts on the subject. How was it that until reading the Chofetz Chaim, they had not realized the vital importance of speaking no evil, and how easily a man could be led astray into the path of wickedness by not observing that golden rule, they asked themselves, and upon reading the book a second time, they were even more impressed and surprised to discover how sensitive and pure-minded the author was, that in order to escape any form of praise or personal aggrandizement, he had omitted his name from the book entirely. It was that self-effacement, that avoidance of acknowledgement and fame, which accompanied Rabbi Yisroel Meir throughout his life. When he was 90 years old and invited to address a large gathering of people, all eager to hear and see him, he angrily declined, saying, 60 years ago, I shrank from personal honors and have avoided them ever since, and now you want me to accept them? But for all his modesty and efforts to avoid publicity, he became famous in his lifetime. When he visited the town Lithuania, a huge crowd gathered to receive and welcome the tzaddik. With his customary innocence, he asked, "Who is everybody waiting for?" He chose the poor life of the teacher rather than the comparative comfort of the rabbinate in his desire to avoid fame and recognition. This decision caused great suffering in the Rav's home, for often they lacked many of the necessities of life. However, Rav Yisroel Meir declined all offers of aid tendered by members of the family, and when his own family protested that they really needed the help preferred, his reply was, "They offered their help because they know I shall refuse it." He was granted a legacy of 150 rubles under the will of his father's sister, and this enabled him to open a small grocery store, which he hoped would provide an income for his family. His wife managed the shop and looked after the business while he sat over his holy books and dealt with Torah. From time to time, he would emerge from the sanctuary of the Beis HaMedrash to see how his wife was managing at the store. He saw that the number of clients was constantly increasing. In fact, every day, more and more people would give their custom to the rabbi's shop. But the store mayor was immediately worried that the other grocers in town would begin to feel the pinch and ordered his wife to keep the shop open for a few hours only each day and not all day as the others did. Yet this did not reduce the number of clients, but merely made them come during the shop's business hours. Thus, Rabbi Yisroel Meir instructed the Rebbe to keep the front door shut and to let people in through the back door only, thinking this would certainly reduce the number of buyers and force them to go back to the other grocers. Whatever money the shop made, he said, would suffice for their simple needs. One day, a non-Jew came to the shop and purchased several items, including a salt herring. However, he left the herring behind, having apparently overlooked it, although he had paid for it. The Rav was terribly upset and searched all over town looking for the non-Jew to give him his herring, but to no avail. He could trace him nowhere. What to do? Taking a full barrel of salt herring, he placed it near the entrance of the shop, and every non-Jewish customer who came in to buy something was given a salt herring for free. In that way, Rav Yisroel Meir relieved his conscience of having, through no fault of his, deprived a non-Jew of the salt herring he had purchased. He constantly worried about the plight of other grocers and begged his clients to buy their requirements elsewhere. He told them they would find better quality goods in other shops. But it was not this that brought about the decline in the Rebbetzin's business, for as a matter of fact, the quality of products at her shop was superior to that found elsewhere. Rabbi Yisroel Meir was so concerned that somebody might complain of poor weight, he insisted everybody should get more than they asked for. Such generosity was more than any business could stand, and finally the shop had to be closed to prevent further losses. Rabbi Yisroel Meir then decided he would purchase a cow with the money left over from the sale of the shop. However, the Chofetz Chaim could not buy just any cow. Firstly, it had to be a cow without horns, so it would not gore anybody. Having found such an animal and taken it home, he set about establishing rules and regulations to prevent the animal straying on to other pastures. He was always on the run, keeping the poor beast within the confines of his own yard. He once left Radin on one of his journeys, and on the way remembered he had forgotten to warn his household about locking the cow shed. He sent a special messenger all the way back to Radin to tell his family not to forget to lock up. Why should he do such a thing? Because we had only one, and one only Chofetz Chaim. And about that time, having assured himself that his family was provided for, he set off for the surrounding villages and towns into Vilna, the metropolis. In Vilna, he entered the Beis Medrash in order to study in peace and solitude, and the months he spent there were the happiest of his life. From time to time, the Rebbe would come to Vilna to buy goods, and Rav Yisrael Meir would accompany her on her rounds. On such days, when he returned to the Beis Medrash, he would refuse to eat the food provided there, saying that he had not studied that day, he did not deserve to eat food specially prepared for those who study Torah. Rav Yisrael Meir discovered he had reached the right degree of proficiency to enable him to achieve what he wished. In 1865, he became head of a small yeshiva in the town of Vishelsak, near Vilna. There he taught Torah to the masses, using the 4 years he spent in that town as a testing ground. In 1868, he returned to Radin and founded his famous yeshiva, which became the seat of learning for scholars from all over the country, craving to hear the wisdom of the tzaddik and gaon of his times. If there are no yeshivas, the Chofetz Chaim would say, there will be no continuity for the Torah. And if there's no continuity for the Torah, there'll be an end to Judaism, God forbid. Thus, despite his powerful objections to honor and publicity, he believed that for the sake of the continuity of the Torah, any means were justified and was prepared for even the worst of indelicacies. Had not the Almighty shown us an example of this, he said he came down from the heaven of heavens to this miserable world to give the Torah to the children of Israel. He therefore gave himself entirely to furthering the progress of the yeshiva, which he saw as the guarantee for the future of the Jewish people. It was he who, together with the Gaon Rav Chaim Ozer, established the Vad HaYeshivas, the Yeshivas Committee, which saved those places of learning from financial distress. In what way was the yeshiva in Radin different from other yeshivas, and what innovations did it initiate? Well, first and foremost, it was different because the Chofetz Chaim headed it, and that in itself was the most important innovation. In what way did he show his individuality? Here are a few episodes indicative of the man and his personality. Dawn is just breaking. The stars are vanishing from the heavens one by one, and the early comers are beginning to enter the gates of the Beis Medrash for morning prayers. The Chofetz Chaim stands there, finger on his lips, telling each man as he enters, "Shh, the boys are still sleeping." One night, fairly late, a young man, a stranger, entered the Beis Medrash and opened the Gemara. He sat there completely absorbed in the problem he was studying and paid no attention to what went on around him. The Chofetz Chaim walked around him, watching the intensity of the boy's concentration. He brought him a mug of hot soup and placed it by his side. Still, the young man maintained his rigid absorption and did not raise his eyes from his Gemara. Chofetz Chaim, his curiosity piqued, went up to the lad, stretched out his hand in welcome, saying, "Shalom Aleichem." The lad looked up and the rabbi continued, "I see somebody has brought you a bowl of hot soup, so you probably have not yet had supper. Drink it while it's hot. It will fill you and satisfy your hungry soul." Rav Yisrael Meir enters the main hall of the Beis Medrash in the late evening and finds the students still learning Torah. He does not wish to disturb their studies, but at the same time he is worried for their health. The hour is quite late. Thus he goes to each boy separately and quietly tells him to go to bed so as to preserve his strength for the next day. After the last lad has left, the Chofetz Chaim snuffs out the lights. Those were the ways of the head of the yeshiva around whom everything revolves. Have you ever seen crossroads? Anyone standing there can look in all four directions of the compass. The Chofetz Chaim stood at the crossroads all of his life. His own pathway was well defined, and it was this ability to stand midway which symbolized his qualities of uniting and blending those around him. He took care of everybody like a conscientious and loving father. His sefer, the Mishneh Berurah, provides clear and concise halachic decisions on the day-to-day problems for the general Jewish public. For soldiers, he wrote a sefer called Machne Yisrael, Israel's Camp, in which he gives Jewish soldiers instruction on how to behave in barracks so as to maintain the divine image that is ingrained in each of us. For the ordinary Jew, he prepared a golden treasure of delightful and exciting Proverbs and Sayings. Again, like we mentioned earlier, if you'd like to learn and listen to the parallels of the Chofetz Chaim, you can do so online at EnglishTorahTapes.com. For the woman, a book of mitzvahs and commandments of specific interest to them. For the Talmud Chacham, a scholar, a profound treatise on the Sechta, a Tzedek Kutchim. And finally, for the children, a collection of exciting stories, which he would keep the youngsters spellbound in every village and town he passed through. He would tell of the Mashiach, who one day is due to arrive, and would compare that event with the news of the return of his son to his parents' home after years of wandering. The parents would rise up early and go to the railway station to be in time to meet their boy. So it would be when Mashiach came. The Gemara relates the story of an Amora who wept when he came upon the words, "I wandered like a lost sheep." His friends consoled him, saying, "Perhaps like a lost sheep being searched for." The intention of those who consoled him was to stress that the wandering sheep, Israel, is like a lost being searched for and trying to find itself. Not only is the one who lost it looking for it, but the lost sheep itself is trying to find its owner. Sometimes the twain shall meet. Sometimes Rabbi Shmuel Meir would close himself in the silk kapotim, leave his house and climb a hill near the town to wait the possible arrival of Mashiach. Thus, by virtue of his naive faith, Rabbi Shmuel Meir mainly preached his philosophy that one should speak no evil. He wrote Sforim, pamphlets and leases on the subject, recommending that silence is golden, and he would enjoin his pupils to study the art of debating and speaking so as to influence people on the value of guarding their tongue and speech. One of his students came to tell him that he had lectured to an audience for 2 hours on the subject but did not feel he had made any impression upon them. "What do you mean, didn't feel?" Bishwam Meir said scornfully. "The very fact that an audience sat quietly without speaking for 2 hours is a tremendous achievement to your credit." Rav Yisroel Meir HaKohen, the Chofetz Chaim, spent his long life in fulfilling worthy and worthwhile activities, although he himself would claim, "I am nothing but a simple Jew who keeps the commandments." Yet, when shortly before his death, a student asked to what he attributed his long life, he replied, "By virtue of Chofetz Chaim." Certainly he did not intend that reply as self-praise, but as a philosophy of life and a guide to the generations to come. He was 95 years old when he died in 1933, and the last words he spoke were, "Where is he who desires to live? Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking guile." This biography was taken from a sefer called Men of Distinction by Rabbi Issa Frankel.